Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is the radio home for the Connie Mack World Series. We'll be interrupting our regular programming to bring you live play-by-play action of all the games. Join us July 21st through July 30th. We've got the best team of announcers with decades of experience. The Connie Mack World Series on KSJE, 90.9 FM or 103.3 FM on air, or online at ksje.com. San Juan Regional Medical Center is your community hospital, committed to making life better for the communities we are privileged to serve. In fact, better is our mission, improving lives through personalized health and care. What matters most to our patients matters most to us, offering a comprehensive range of inpatient, outpatient, and emergency care services so you can get the quality care you need right here at home. San Juan Regional Medical Center, celebrating life better here since 1910. KSJE is proud to support the Summer Terrace Concert Series, Saturdays at the Farmington Museum. The Summer Terrace Concert Series at the Farmington Museum, 3041 East Main Street, Saturdays this summer from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin, and Megan Cullop is off this week, but welcome to Solutions from the Street. It is our biweekly program when we deal with solutions to local problems that don't involve a lot of government intervention and things along that line. We're glad that you're with us. We're going to start the program in just a moment, but we have some other business to take care of because KSJE is, of course, the official station of the Connie Mack World Series. And so before we get into our Solutions from the Street program, we want to do what we've been doing all week, which is getting an update from last night's Connie Mack action from Coach Kirk Carpenter, who was, of course, one of the members of our broadcast team who's been covering the games all week. So without any further ado, to get us wrapped up on what happened in the park yesterday and what to get ready for today, which could include the championship game later on tonight. We'll see how that works out. Here's Coach Carpenter.
Hi, fans. This is a Connie Mack World Series wrap-up with Coach Carpenter, a recap from Ricketts Park. Game number 17 was UBC from Dallas, Texas, and the Colton Nighthawks. Both had hopes of getting into the championship Friday, as they may crown a champion later tonight here at Ricketts Park. The winner of this game would advance into the semifinals later today. The Nighthawks struck first with one run in the first. UBC answered with three in the bottom of the first, only to see the Nighthawks score six in the top of the second with a grand slam that provided four of those runs. UBC would cut the lead in the bottom of the inning by 7-4. UBC chipped away at the lead and made it a 7-6 ball game after three innings. In the fourth, the Nighthawks would score four more runs to take an 11-6 lead, and Colton added four more in the fifth. UBC, who had a tremendous comeback yesterday, did not have the same magic today. They fall short by a score of 16-10. In this game, these two teams combined for 28 runs and 29 hits. But again, it's the Colton Nighthawks that will make their way into Championship Friday. Game 18, two strong teams faced off in this one, and two teams that nobody needs an introduction to. It was the Southern Cal Renegades and the Florida Legends. The Legends lost their game to the Midland Redskins 4-3, who posted a comeback in the seventh of game 12. The Renegades lost to D-Bat in game number 16 as D-Bat outscored them 6-2. The Legends struck first, scored four runs on four hits. Renegades took a 5-4 lead after three, extending the lead by another run in the top of the fourth, only to see the lead disappear after a four-run inning for the Legends in the bottom of the fourth. Three of those came off a three-run home run. All the scoring they needed took place in four innings, and the Legends win this one by a score of 8-6. They punched their ticket into the Final Four and Championship Friday. Game 19 was a battle of giants. It was the Midland Redskins and D-Bat in a battle of the undefeated. Midland scored first with one run in the bottom of the first inning and added three more in the bottom of the third. D-Bat cut that lead in the top of the sixth with a mammoth home run over the left field fence, made it a 4-2 ball game. But it was great pitching that did D-Bat in, as Midland wins this one by a score of 4-2. So Midland will go into Championship Friday as the only undefeated team. Games and matchups are set for Friday. There'll be three games. At 11:45, it'll be the Florida Legends and D-Bat. At 3 o'clock, Midland will take on the Colton Nighthawks, and the championship game is set for 6:30. Now, the biggest issue to remember about the championship game is if Midland does get beat, there will absolutely be an if game, but they'll still have to play that game at 6:30 tomorrow night, and there will be an if game Saturday. So there's a lot of things that can still happen here today at Ricketts Park, but we could crown a champion of the Connie Mack World Series, so we invite you to tune in to each and every pitch here on KSJE. This has been a Connie Mack World Series wrap-up with Coach Carpenter, a recap from Ricketts Park.
Thank you, Coach. And, of course, we will have all the games right here, live coverage on KSJE, beginning, of course, around noon today with the first game that is scheduled to play at 11:45, 3 p.m., and again at 6:30 p.m. Could be the final three games of the Connie Mack World Series, depending on who wins, of course. But if there is the if game, that will be played tomorrow. And I know a lot of folks are excited, as they should be, about the network coverage from CBS of either tonight's 6:30 game or tomorrow's game. And so, if you want to get to the stands and be in the background of some of the TV coverage, that would be your opportunity. All right, let's turn to our focus this morning, though, our solution from the street. And it is a solution that we have talked about before, but we're getting an update to this solution. So we have a returning guest in the studio with us this morning. Marilyn Montoya is back from the Tibbetts All Abilities Park Foundation. Good morning. Welcome back to KSJE.
Good morning, Scott. It's so good to be back.
Good to have you back.
Share all of our upcoming news.
Exactly. There's big news to share, too,
which is
very exciting. Also, you brought with you another guest, too, Jessica Lazenby, who is here, and she is the treasurer of the Tibbetts All Abilities Park Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Welcome back to you. You've been here before in a different capacity, so good to have you back as well.
Yeah,
thank you for being here.
Me.
You bet. And so let's start with an update a little bit about the All Abilities Park for folks maybe who have not been thinking about or haven't heard about this before. Let's give a brief kind of background as what we're talking about, Marilyn, because this would be on the site of the old Tibbetts Middle School, way going back, old Farmington High School.
Exactly.
But that's what we're talking about, that area of Farmington and trying to get some new life and some new opportunities there.
Right. Well, just a kind of a brief overview to start with. Farmington has 58 parks. There is not one park that is wheelchair accessible for someone in a wheelchair to get to the play area. So when you look at that, you see a need. We have close to 4,000 kids within the county, but we did include Dulce and the kids from Durango that are identified as special needs children.
Mm-hmm.
And when you add in then the 18% of the adult population that have registered disabilities, that's a pretty significant number. So this park, it has been 4 years in the process, but oh wow, it's just going to be wonderful. We are going to take up the full 8 acres of the old Tibbetts property.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, there is the I think that's the most current design suggestion from our architect, MRWM, out of Albuquerque.
And for our radio listeners, we're showing this on the screen for our video listeners this morning.
Yes.
So that's
I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. But yes, but that's the latest kind of design. But it's really kind of a fluid conversation at the moment, because you're asking the public for ideas and what to include, and we'll talk about that too this morning.
Right.
But this is kind of how it would work out with the site that you have, which is that site of Tibbetts, old Tibbetts School, and the track and that area of town.
And I wish your listeners could see, because this is going to make such an impact, not just to that neighborhood, but to our city, to our county, and to our whole little circle of the four corners up here.
Another draw, I think, for folks. Oh, you mentioned you included folks from Durango and Dulce, and we know that they come into town to shop, people from those communities, and this would be another maybe thing they can do while they're here is to stop and have the kids enjoy some time at the park and maybe do some shopping before they head home.
Well, and it won't just be kids. This park, I will have to tell you, lots of kudos to the city of Farmington and to Shauna Reeves. We have worked with her, and the city has just been awesome in working with us in bringing this architect. He is so attuned to the needs of what we were talking about. And when I first started this project, what I had in mind was kind of what I describe a playground on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
This man went outside that box and has created a park that has all inclusive aspects, but that anybody and everybody can enjoy, whether you have a disability or not. But every aspect of it is wheelchair accessible, with the exception of the climbing wall.
Okay.
And he just couldn't figure out a way to get a wheelchair up that climbing wall.
I bet if he could, he would. That's for sure.
He's still looking at ideas.
Right. There you go. Well, that's wonderful. And it's really exciting to see this kind of moving forward quick. It seems like it's moving pretty fast, which is exciting. Before we get too much longer into the show, I did have a photo in the display here, because the park was also mentioned last night at Connie Mack World Series, right?
Yeah. We got to throw out the first pitch last night. We had three folks throwing out the pitch, and Dr. Paul Cutler, he's on our board there too, and he got to throw a pitch. Whit and Carey and Jerry.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I can't remember his name right now.
We'll get it.
Right. Josh Reddy.
Okay.
Something like that.
It's three folks there that were there to help get the game started.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful.
They did awesome.
And so it's getting a lot of community support, a lot of discussion in the community about the All Abilities Park. And so that's kind of why we wanted to get an update here on this solution. And as you've mentioned then, Marilyn, it's going to be really a park for everybody, not just for children, but for adults, not just for those with disabilities, but for everybody, it sounds like.
Exactly. This architect has designed spaces that families can go. All of the picnic tables and areas will have a place that a wheelchair can pull into.
Right.
If you've ever been out into the community in the parks, the picnic tables don't have a space that a wheelchair can pull into. Someone in a wheelchair has to pull to the side and eat sideways.
Right.
And so, he's very, very attuned. It'll have three bathrooms. One question we always get is, are you keeping the Emma Weaver building, the Emma Weaver Library?
Right.
And yes, they're looking at working to make some space in there that would accommodate children and adults on the autism spectrum that need less of the outdoor stimulation.
Gotcha.
All of the bathrooms that we have, he originally had two. After meeting with the TAP board, the Tibbetts All Ability Park board, we said, no, we need more. It's 8 acres, and some of these folks can't get from one end to the other.
Right.
And so he's put a bathroom in the middle. All of the bathrooms will have a family configuration, and this was kind of a new thing for me, is the handicap configurations. If you are okay for a child in a wheelchair, but if you have an adult in a wheelchair with a caregiver, that's a tight squeeze. And so having the family dimensions restrooms in each of these three, I mean, that's just going to make it that much easier.
Right.
So...
Very good. Well, that will definitely help. And we're seeing, again, the map of the location there in town, right there on Apache Street, of course, between kind of Butler and Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the location that we're talking about. If you drive by there today, boy, it doesn't look like much after they put the building's gone. And so there's a big pile of dirt. The track is there. The Emma Weaver Library is still there. And that's what you're hoping to be able to reuse as part of the design.
Right. The architect said it had good bones.
Well, that's good.
Yes.
Good to know. And that's a more recent building on that location, as opposed to the school that was torn down to make way for the park. But I wanted to talk, the city did a, re, or you did, or the architect, pardon me, did a presentation to the city and citizens about his work and the work of the company that's doing this, the design and all the thought that's going into it. And I thought that was really interesting, as you mentioned too, that this design is going to be for children and adults with disabilities, but also be accessible to the other folks in the community who aren't disabled and their caregivers and things along that line. So I thought that was really interesting in talking about some of the way how kids learn, the different ways that they learn, whether you have a disability or not. And so these were some of the books, I think, that were mentioned in the presentation that he was referring to, right? About trying to bring things into the design that goes along with these lines of these books that are that we're seeing on the screen. And so was that a direction from the board or was that from the architect? I mean, what did you ask them to do?
Well, so the architect is really into the research-based concepts of parks now, and a lot of that was on his own. He's got a great track record of accessible parks in Albuquerque mostly.
Okay.
So he was a great fit for this project, and he just really wants this park to be everything that we've dreamed of, and they've been totally supportive of our dream and the community's dream. Whenever they're doing input sessions, they take a lot of that to heart, and they evolve the concept every time, and it's just more than we could have ever imagined. So.
Gotcha, very good. And when we think about how kids play or learn, again, from the presentation, all these different sensory things, the touch, the sight, the hearing, the smell, and the taste, all these things were part of the presentation as well, I guess, to try to, again, set a baseline of how kids play and how they learn and what they experience, I guess, when they're out in nature and at a playground or what have you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Very good. And then some of the other things that I pulled off of the presentation, the side-by-side play and how you do that and integrating accessible routes is a desired feature for everyone. And as you mentioned, Marilyn, every section of this park, except the climbing wall, would be accessible
so far
by wheelchair accessibility, correct?
Correct.
And that's by design.
Correct.
And that's really important.
It is important. This has been a learning curve for me, Scott. The wood chips that you see in any standard park play area, those are ADA compliant. The Adults with Disabilities Act, that meets that compliancy. But you can't roll a wheelchair or a stroller or a gatewalker to get to that play area. And so that makes it, even though it's ADA compliant, it still makes it inaccessible. And so having a pour-and-play walkway to a play structure that is designed for children to be able to get to and play on is of primary importance. With that comes a big price tag.
I was going to ask you, and that's some other type of structure?
Covering.
Covering, mm-hmm. right? That's a little cushiony, right? Because it is a playground. Mm-hmm. But it also would allow then other wheeled vehicles or wheelchairs or things like that, scooters, say, across it.
Correct.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, so grandpa can push his grandchild on the swing, you know?
Right.
That's not something that you can do anywhere now, so.
Right. And that would be a big improvement, certainly. And I know, Marilyn, last time you were here, we talked a little bit about some of the other parks that you had looked at that have some of these features. The nearest one, I think, is in the Rio Rancho area,
correct,
if I remember correctly.
Correct.
And so this would be the only other All Abilities Park, then, in quite an area.
In the state.
Right?
There is one that's down in the Las Cruces area.
Okay.
It's a very small one. It's a very small access one. Ours is going to be a major draw.
With all these things you're planning on.
And I'm going to brag. I'm going to say we're going to beat Rio Rancho out the door because this is going to be a location park. People are going to want to come just to be in the park.
With all the amenities and all the things you have planned for it, right?
Yes.
And that's, I think, well, by design, because you're talking about it right now. Some of the things, again, that I pulled off of the presentation, again, including activities that require teamwork. And that, why is that important? Why would that be an important thing to have in a park like this?
Well, it kind of feeds into the inclusivity of it. You have children with disabilities playing alongside children with typical abilities, and they're all learning from each other and learning to relate to each other and play together, and it's really important.
Gotcha. And I would think at a non all accessible park, children with disabilities kind of feel left out then because they can't do these things with those other kids.
I really wish your listeners could see the pictures, because the picture you've got up there has a modern day merry-go-round.
Right.
But if you'll see the little girl in the wheelchair, she's sitting at the side. She's not able to be included because those are wood chips she'd have to go through.
Right. And so that would
be
different.
So that tells the picture.
Right. Very true. Very true. And, of course, our radio audience, if you would like to tune in and see what we're talking about, this program is being broadcast on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, or you can watch it later on today and catch up on what you're not able to see by listening to it on the radio, but that's perfectly fine. Interaction as well, same thing, right?
Same,
the
yeah.
whole idea to get the non-disabled children with the maybe children with disabilities to be able to interact together mm-hmm. and play together.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's an important thing as well. Jessica, you have a background with this type of thing too as well, right?
Yeah.
From a previous job, I think, right?
Yeah.
Just remind us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I used to work for Presbyterian Medical Services, Roundtree Children's Developmental Services, working with children birth to three with developmental delays or risk for delays. So I'm really passionate about this. We've been working on this concept, gosh, since like, well, for 5 years as a TAP board, and even before that, when I was with Roundtree, we had worked with the city. There's a Roundtree Operation Playground. It's a tiny little inclusive park right next to the Aquatic Center.
That I remember.
Yeah.
I remember going, I think it was ribbon cutting maybe.
Yeah.
Because I was a board member and still am.
Yeah, it was Leadership San Juan Project.
Okay.
It had some more phases, and it never got to be expanded, but there are a couple inclusive elements there, and we just were always wondering why there's nowhere for our kids to go play with other kids, and we all kind of somehow got together with a bunch of like-minded people and realized we were going for the same goal, and it's pretty awesome. We have therapists, people with disabilities, former school employees, current school employees, just everyone working in the whole gamut with disabilities, and it's a great team.
And I guess, and Marilyn Montoya, I guess the reason maybe this has taken off so much is because of what Jessica's talking about, is that there's a lot of folks in the community who see the need for this, who want to put their efforts behind it, maybe put their money where their mouth is, but really try to help make this a reality from those little baby steps of what Roundtree did so many years ago, to see just how much more needed, even on a bigger scale, a playground like this is necessary.
Absolutely. The cost of it is going to be a lot.
Right.
Adaptive equipment is higher.
Right.
You can't get an adaptive equipment anything at Walmart or Sam's Club. These are all special. So that means fundraising is a priority. Our board, the Tibbetts All Ability Park Foundation, is actively doing fundraising to be able to pay. You know, the city has to go by the procurement laws. Whoever comes in with the lowest bid, that's where they have to go.
Right.
And if you'll remember, we kind of fashion ourselves that when the city shelter was built, the animal shelter, you know, the city said, we'll get this size cages for the animals. And the Animal League said, oh, no. We want it bigger and better. We want animals to have this size cage with bedding, and we'll pay the difference. And so that's kind of where we are with the foundation.
Gotcha.
We want to be able to pay. When you look at just a standard play area to have wood chips in the bottom as the layer,
right,
that's about $9,000. To do a pour and play there, wheelchair accessible, it's $155,000. That's a significant difference. But we want to be able to say, let's put a pour and play path up to this structure. We don't have to do the whole thing, mm-hmm. but we can do a pour and play path, and we'll pay for that portion of it.
Got you.
So our board has a goal, a $5 million goal by January. We have close to $1.25 million pledged at this point. We've got several presentations out into the community requesting further funds. Jessica is in charge of the fundraising commitment, and bless her heart, she needs a crown on that one.
Right.
No.
Good for you, right?
But in October, we're going to have a, help me out here, a
2K
fun, run, walk, and roll.
Okay.
Everybody. I'll let you take it off and that, share.
And that'll be a major fundraiser then for what we're talking about, correct?
Yeah, so we're still in some of the planning phases of it because, as you said, this is moving really fast and we're having to come up with ideas really quickly and fundraise really quickly. So we are working with a wonderful team of people on this 2K. We're hoping it will be at the Tibbetts All Ability Park site on October 15th. We're thinking like 9 to 2-ish. It'll be like a Halloween theme. Kids can dress up. There'll be food for the kiddos, the participants. I mean, it doesn't just have to be kids that participate, but we're hoping to get kids to get sponsored to walk the 2K. Was that 5 laps around that, that track that's there? And yeah, hoping to get some sponsors for that as well. We do have some sponsors already, which is really exciting. But we hope to have registration up on our tapfoundation.com, and TAP has two A's, for the walk and roll, run, walk and roll.
Right.
And, yeah. So
but that's coming in October, so folks can kind of put that on their calendars,
yes,
right?
Yes, please.
And there is the address, I believe, right, with the tapfoundation, two A's.com. And you can find out more information about this event and the other events that TAP is doing, the foundation, and some of the other things. And then we also put on the screen the City of Farmington webpage where they are talking about the All Abilities Park. That is COFAllAbilitiesPark.org. And that is kind of where kind of the city side of this is playing out as well. And they really have to be a major partner. You couldn't do this without the city.
Gosh.
You mentioned how much Shauna Reeves, the Director of Parks, Recreation, Cultural Affairs, has been doing. And certainly the city will be doing the heavy lifting, I think, for money and equipment and construction and some of this stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Grants. The city has been 100% supportive of this project from the inception of our idea. They fought just as hard as we have for a lot of this stuff. And they've already got grant funding. They've foot the bill for everything so far.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And and again, this all came about too from a property sale from the school district of the Tibbetts old school property to the City of Farmington. And that's really kind of what allowed the rest of this kind of to take place now that you had an actual site. And the city agreed that maybe that's what needed to go in that site. That's, I think, one of the things that really kind of started the ball rolling, if you will.
And you know, Scott, I see it as a partnership. Mm-hmm. I mean, the school and the city are partnering. I mean, they did the land, but they're also, you know, they're helping in other ways. You get the kiddos out to do the 2K run. So, again, it goes back to this wonderful community that we live in.
Right.
Everybody putting their little pieces in. And I, one thing I did want to say to your listeners is, if you want to be a part of this and make a donation, but you're kind of cash poor right now, but you order on Amazon, you can go to Amazon Smile, identify the Tibbetts All Abilities Park Foundation as the charity, and a percentage of whatever is purchased will then come to us. And since January, when we registered, we've gotten two checks. So, you know, it's a very easy and painless way to be a part of this park.
Right. And that program, if I understand it correctly, it doesn't add anything more to the bill that you're paying to Amazon. It is their foundation then that directs their monies, as their shoppers would ask them to do, to be able to say, I want to send a portion of my purchase price to this charity.
Correct.
And so that's how you get those checks. It's not anything more from the customer.
Nope. Yep.
And that's how it works. So. Good to know. A couple more pictures I wanted to share as we wrap up our program today. It's a few minutes remaining this morning, but here are some other photos that came out of the presentation that your architect made to the city council. Gosh, that was just, what, was it earlier this month or in June?
It was like the
16th. July the 12th,
right?
July the 12th, I think.
Okay.
July the 12th.
2 weeks ago. just a few weeks ago. Yeah. And so here are some of the other photos about large play and structures and things that we're talking about that are accessible, right, and ideas that could be part of the park. And this is all kind of, as I mentioned, an evolving conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing's really been set in stone.
I would say we are probably about 40% acceptant of his designs.
Okay.
That means there's still some room to change and do, you know, make some modifications. But I think we are agreed that it's about 40% at what he has recommended.
And I would strongly encourage you to visit the COF All Abilities website. They have a survey up there where people who will be utilizing this park can give their feedback on what's important to them and what they'd like to see in the park. And that's part of what's making this concept evolved. So
right.
I strongly encourage you to do that.
Very good. And I think there's two surveys, right? One is for adults and one mm-hmm. for maybe sure. younger people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important. And you can find that there at the COFAllAbilitiesPark.org website. And then, of course, the TAAPFoundation.com website is for the All Abilities Park Foundation, where you're putting together all the details about the event in October.
Yes.
And the progress and how everything else is going. And if folks, I guess, just want to send you a check, they could find an address at that website, too, to do that?
They yes, could. Or send it to 804 East Navajo, Farmington, 87401.
Right. Okay.
I almost gave you my home address.
No.
No.
Very good. And that will help as well, right? And you are a nonprofit organization, right? So if folks are concerned about that for tax purposes, that would be helpful to know.
And they will get a letter for their taxes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Very, very good. So what's next, I guess, as we wrap up our conversation this morning? Marilyn, you're just going to start raising money, obviously, and showing the city that there's a lot of support in the community, dollars and cents, as well as effort for this project?
Correct. We're thinking about construction, you know, that, mm-hmm. that there are built-in delays, sort of. Our understanding at this point is that going forward, they will come back in probably August, maybe September, to give us a new, based on the input that they've gotten, a new updated design. We are hoping that by September we are at the 90% approval rate, which, if fingers and toes crossed, if that's approved, then they'll be closer to going to bid. Once they go to bid, we're hoping that closes around the first of the year. And that they can start construction early part of next year.
Wow.
You know, if everything rolled away it should, we would hope February-ish to break ground.
Okay.
If they have to phase it, then the time for construction is going to be a little longer. Our hope is that we don't phase it, that it's all one process, because once you get one phase, the impetus and the excitement for phase two kind of drops off. So we want to get the whole
right.
park done in one phase, and about 16 to 18 months later we'll have a red ribbon cutting and opening up.
It'll be ready to go.
Can't believe it.
How
yes.
exciting is that, right? And so you mentioned $5 million was your goal for mm-hmm. this fundraising mm-hmm. effort, right? And that's a portion of the cost, but the city is working with grants and other things to make up the other part. What's our total number that we're looking at? Do we know?
$13 million is the estimated okay. cost with inflation in
right.
mind. Yeah.
Right, we have that to worry about too, as much. So, as you mentioned, all these things, all these elements in the park cost a bit more than what we would expect for a mm-hmm. for a non-accessible park, just because of the additional materials and things that have to be in design that need to be put into this. And so that would be the reason. But it's a big park. I mean, this would be one of the city's bigger parks once it's completed, right?
Correct.
And so that's another part of this as well. So. It's very exciting. Congratulations to both of you and to the Tibbetts All Abilities Park Foundation. Again, it is the Tibbetts All Abilities Park and the two websites there, the TAAPFoundation.com and the COFAllAbilitiesPark.org. Thank you both for coming in for the update on this exciting project for the community and the surrounding area, too. As you mentioned, it really goes beyond the city limits of Farmington.
It does.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome, and good luck with everything. We'll have you back, I'm sure.
I hope so.
Yes.
I haven't lost your number yet, Marilyn. You know I know how to reach you. So.
Yes, you can. I can run, but you can't hide.
That's true. That's very true.
Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
Thank you both
very much. Before we go, everyone, just a reminder, our Solutions from the Street every other Friday here on KSJE. If you have an idea for a solution that you would like us to highlight on the program, please send us an email at ksje@sanjuancollege.edu and let us know what your idea is. We'd love to hear from you or just some hellos from the community. You can always drop us an email and let us know about your idea or just to say hi. And of course, next week, we're back to That's Interesting. Megan will be back. We'll be talking about all things interesting, and we will open up the phone lines. That's when you get to call in and tell us what's interesting in your world. It could be the All Abilities Park or some other things that are going on in the community. So we will open up the phone lines next Friday from 8 to 9 a.m. right here on KSJE. Have a great and safe weekend, everyone. Back with you Monday on KSJE Farmington. There's more Joltworthy Entertainment coming in August when Andy takes the stage at the Farmington Civic Center. Find out more at visitfarmingtonnm.org and jolt your summer. KSJE and San Juan College present the Student Success Coaching Tip of the Week.
Hello again, this is Emin Chi from the Student Achievement Center bringing you coaching tips over the radio for week 8, finals, finals, finals. Don't let finals week become a nightmare of stress and anxiety. Get prepared and conquer your finals with these final tips. For one, start early. Two, create a study schedule and stick to it. Three, prioritize your study time. Some exams may be harder than others. Number four, attend a review session. Number five, ask questions about the exam and study for the style of the exam. Create a study guide. Number six, create a study guide or make flashcards. Number seven, take breaks and stay well rested. Number eight, quiz yourself, or better, have someone quiz you. Number nine, visit the tutoring center for additional support.
The Student Success Coaching Tip of the Week, presented by KSJE and the Student Achievement Center at San Juan College.
Yat'e, journey with Native art voices of the Four Corners and me, Vinaya Yazzie, where we will trek into the Native artist dialogue and narrative. Together, we will take a glimpse into the art process and the lives of the Navajo, Apache, Ute, and Pueblo artists living within Arizona, Utah, Colorado, and New Mexico. Tune in every third Thursday of the month at 9:30 a.m. or find podcast episodes. Native art voices of the Four Corners, great artist stories are the journey of art in the Four Corners.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.